This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Maria Torres. How are you, Maria?
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. We're sitting in, what's the name of the restaurant?
Hispania
in London. And we've just had a lovely presentation on talking about Miguel's ancestral vines. You guys have had a project to get historical vines that are no longer commercial back into production. And I suppose I was explaining this to Jane earlier that historically a lot of vines were chosen for different reasons now. For example, in the sort of 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s, production levels were the driver. How much booze can I make as cheaply as possible? And in the 80s and 90s, that changed a little bit to less about volume and more about quality. You're going back into the vineyard, finding old varieties that maybe weren't as popular back when production was an issue. What sort of criteria are you looking for these old vines?
Well, we are searching quality and adaptation to climate change. These are the two things that that we are searching. We are not searching varieties with huge productivity and poor quality. This is not our goal. We are taking into account three parameters, no? The first is quality, with a good acidity.
Yep.
The second is productivity in the vineyard also. I mean, you need minimum to have productivity that makes sense to plant that.
Yep.
If it's too low, then no sense, no?
Yeah.
No commercial, and nobody's going to plant it. And the third also is that you can achieve the maturity later, is good. And of course, then also resilient to dryness, no? To high temperatures. This is also important. Yeah.
Just on that, wanting the grapes to finish ripening later in the season, my understanding, and you will know this much better than I do, is that if you can help it, you don't want vines finishing up ripening in the middle of summer when the temperature's really hot. Why is that?
Yes, because when we are talking about maturity, there are like two different maturities, the phenolic from the skins and the saccharimetric from the inside the grape.
What do you call it?
Saccharimetric, from sugar.
Saccharimetric?
Saccharimetrica. It's like from sugar, in the pulp.
Yeah, I always call it sugar acidity balance.
But yes,
yeah.
Exactly. If you have good conditions of temperature and humidity, then the grapes, the two maturities, they are going at the same time, no? And then the winemaker has just to decide the right moment of picking, because the content of sugar is okay and everything is okay, no? But if you have heat wave in this period, perhaps then the vine is suffering a lot and perhaps needs water and has no water. So perhaps it's taking the water from the grapes. And then, of course, the winemaker, when makes a control, he will see that the content of sugar is okay. I have to pick the grapes, but the skins are not ripe enough because they need more time. So the two maturities are not getting at the same time.
I see. So what's happening is during the height of summer, the grapes are losing water because of whatever reason, which means your sugar levels are now at the point you want to pick, but your physiological phenolic ripeness isn't there, even though your sugar ripeness is there. So you land up with underripe or green flavors, perhaps, in the vine.
Exactly. If you pick too soon, perhaps you have green flavors or less volume or less complexity in your wine. And if you pick too late, perhaps overripe and lower acidity, so no.
As the temperature gets higher, the amount of water the vine needs increases.
Yeah,
and
it's like a person.
Yeah.
We also transpirate when it's hot.
Oh,
it's the same with the plants. The evapotranspiration is very high. And when we are also taking decisions of irrigation, we also take into account the evapotranspiration of the plants.
When did you start the Ancestral Vine Project?
Well, it was in the 90s. I was not working in the company at that moment. I was in the university.
Yes. I thought you were going to say it's play school.
No. Well, in fact, it was the end of 80s. I started in the company in 98.
Started in the 90s?
Yes.
90s. And how many vines have you looked at now that were potentially native grape varieties that are no longer commercially grown?
Yeah, well, we have been for the moment in more than 139 places. And we have found 64 varieties. And we have registered for the moment 14 from these varieties.
Yeah. So what do you do? Take cuttings and then propagate them out?
Well, when we visit do the first visit, we go with a xampelograph from...
Now, tell me the name of this, because this is the person who looks at vine leaves and goes, that's a Chardonnay and that's a Cabernet Sauvignon. Or in Chile's case, that's not Merlot, that's a Carmenere.
Yes, exactly. He's a specialist in vine identity.
Can you say the name again?
Nice. Ampelografo. Ampelograph is the name.
Yeah.
And he's a specialist. And so he can recognize the majority of the vines in all the world. He's very good. Mm. And he has also specialized in Catalan varieties. So he's helping us. And if he doesn't recognize and we see that could be interesting, then we start all the process of DNA analysis, virus elimination, sending material to Madrid and Murcia, then to the Catalan government and all these kind of things that at the end takes more than 14 years, 13 years.
Yeah, it's a long process, isn't it, to get a vine up to propagation into commercial volumes.
Yes.
So what are the success stories? What are the grape varieties you go, actually, there's a chance this could be really good?
Hmm. Well, as I said, no, there are others that are coming from, but for the moment, for me, I like very much the four varieties that I presented in a monovarietal wine. So Forcada, it's very interesting.
That's a white wine.
Yeah, white wine. This is a lot of minerality, citric, good acidity, achieves the maturity very late. It's good for still wine and also for sparkling. So I think it's a very interesting and elegant variety. Moneu, it's interesting because it has a lot of red fruit in the nose, good acidity, so I think it's interesting and not too much alcohol.
Yep.
The third variety that we presented was Pirene. So this is interesting because it's like, I say, like the Catalan Pinot Noir. It's very elegant, fine tannins, good fruit in the nose, very fresh, fragrant. The only thing is that the yields are, for the moment, too low.
Yep.
And the final one is the Gonfals, which has more ripe fruit, more volume, more texture, more concentration in the mouth, but it's also very interesting.
Okay, and the white wines, the Forcada.
Yeah.
We saw three examples of that. We saw a sparkling wine.
Yeah.
Which... it really had that rapier acidity that I almost expect from English sparkling wines. It was really sharp. In fact, maybe too sharp for my liking. I thought it was just a little bit too oomph there.
Well, need more time. Eh? It's not finished.
Yeah.
It will be released. It's just still in contact with the leaves. And it will be released in 1 year. So it's still young.
A bit more leaves contact will take the edge off it, perhaps. Yeah. And surprisingly, you said you didn't do any malolactic on that wine.
No.
Well, I suppose in Spain you don't really think of people needing to do malolactic, do you? Because
no, we analyze the parameters from the very beginning. In some cases, we have been also producing sparklings in Torres, and I can remember that we produced a sparkling very interesting from vineyards that were in the Pyrenees some years ago, and the vintage 2013 was so cold that we did 100% malolactic. So if it's necessary, we do. Mm. But in this case, was not necessary.
Okay.
Well, if I would recommend for the moment two varieties in this moment, I would recommend Forcada and Pirene, perhaps, yeah.
Okay, that's the white and the red. And the thing about these wines is you...
And Moneu also, yeah.
and another one. My favorite two are these four. These wines that you've been experimenting with, they're available under Miguel Torres's Clos Ancestral, is that right? That's a branding for this type of wines, is that correct? One last thing, I'm sort of done, but I just wanted to say, go Petit Verdot. When you said you really like Petit Verdot, I was like, yes! One of my nicest wines I've ever had from Spain was a Humilier. It was from Humilier. It was a Petit Verdot.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who the producer was.
Marqués de Grignon or was no, El Nido.
I can't. Do you know what? I really liked it. This was about 10 years ago. They stopped selling it in the UK, this particular wine. I bought a case of it. I drank it over about 10 years, and that was about 10 years ago. And it was just absolutely fabulous wine. Really, really liked it. And I was like, Petit Verdot, it grows in Alicante pretty well.
Now we are producing in Jean Leon a Petit Verdot Merlot. I say that because if you want to try it, it's available also in the UK.
Is it? Oh, yeah. I'll definitely get it. It's 100% Petit Verdot.
No, we are increasing it because we have planted a lot, but yeah. There is a percentage of Merlot and Petit Verdot is increasing. Yeah.
Nice. What was the name of the wine again?
3055 Jean Leon. This is the license number of taxi driver that he had when he was a taxi driver in New York.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Another story.
All right, Maria. We'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank
Cheers.
You.